Everybody seems shocked that they age. We see it in others, sure, but somehow can't make the leap. The old trick knee, you know, to understand that the faded, wrinkled body reflected in the store windows, there is ours. But why not, since it's inevitable to everybody except Dick Clark and Cher, applaud this aging thing as just another season? Today's Mind's Eye writers, callow youth all, at least in their heads, describe their own intimations of mortality on aging. It's not for sissies. That is no country for old men. The young in one another's arms, birds in the trees, those dying generations. At their song, the salmon falls, the mackerel crowded seas, fish, flesh or fowl, commend all summer long whatever is begotten, born and dies. Caught in that sensual music, all neglect, monuments of unaging intellect. An aged man is but a paltry thing, a tattered coat upon a stick, unless soul clap its hands and sing and louder sing for every tatter in its mortal dress. Nor is there singing school, but studying monuments of its own magnificence. And therefore I have sailed the seas and come to the holy city of Byzantium. Sailing to Byzantium by William Butler Yeats. One spry lady, 82, likes to tease that old age has shown her more action than youth. I go to bed with arthritis, and I wake up with Mr. Coffee, she says. Everybody seems shocked that they age. We see it in others, sure, but somehow can't make the leap. The old trick knee, you know, to understand that the faded, wrinkled body reflected in the store windows, there is ours. As Wordsworth said, getting and spending, we lay waste our powers. Nothing is worse than a poor toupee or a comb-over, unless it be belly-showing pants or somebody's grandmama. But why not, since it's inevitable to everybody, except Dick Clark and Cher, applaud this aging thing as just another season? The late Tony Randall, after all, who fathered his only two children in his 70s, said the best things in his life happened in that decade. Today's Mind's Eye writers, callow youth all, at least in their heads, describe their own intimations of mortality on again with the aging or aging. It's not for sissies. Sifting and widowing seems an inevitable part of getting ready to shuffle one's mortal junk collection onto the next generation, whether that baggage be literal or metaphorical. Oscar Morales considers that stroll down memory lane.
I was asked by my soon-to-be ex-wife to come pick up the 3 or 4 file cabinets of papers and books that I still had left at the house. The musty smell of being in a sometimes wet basement for over 10 years, and the fact that my one-bedroom apartment was already overcrowded with my 16-year-old son and both of our belongings, this was not what I had in mind to celebrate my divorce. I realized that as soon as I brought the cargo over, that I was in for at least a month or so of going through individual file boxes. If I did that religiously, I could have enough space to walk around my bed again at some point, and thought I would do a box a day, so I could be done in no time. The first box contained files on Fiesta Hispana, a Mexican festival I had helped organize in my hometown. No, I did not live there at the time, nor had any desire to do so. But the festival became my chance to see my Latino friends once a year at a big party that I helped put on, with Miller beer, mariachi music, slow pitch softball, and steak tacos. This fiesta was my father's proudest moment, to be able to bring his friends over to his picnic table and have me pour him all the free beer his friends could drink and plates of food to eat. He was too happy to get drunk himself and had the biggest grin of his life stretched across his face. In the early 80s and 90s, there were bills, posters, and meeting agendas, sometimes reaching 18 copies of the same meeting minutes, which was more copies than people who cared enough to show up. I thought I would organize the papers by bills and press releases and minutes, and it became clear that maybe if I would do it year by year, it would be easier. So it took about a week to organize from 1979 to 1992. And as I was filtering through the years, I started to remember the names of people that I had forgotten. Carol Moreno, who died in the summer of 1987. Kathy Quiros, who helped us out for a couple of years. And forgot that I had organized a Latino film festival one year. There were some press clippings that I never remembered being quoted in. As I emptied the long green army-colored cardboard file box drawer, I saw that two small mice had been crushed inside. Both were dead, and that could have been the reason this box smelled, but I think it was still that basement. I organized my love letters next, if you can call them love letters. When they are written by someone you don't really care about, is it pen letters or just correspondence? And I found letters from Hortensia, who lived in Clyde, Ohio, and I think we met in a conference in Miami. And I remembered that I had planned to spend a weekend with her, but for some reason, I think it was a fact that I did not like driving long distances alone, we never reconnected except through the mail. It almost reminded me of those mid-90s email and chat room romances that people were having, using words as bait. The easiest way to organize my letters became to file them by person. I found the letters from Mary Sue from Texas, a poet and songwriter who, along with excellent writing, had nice penmanship. Kathy from California, who wrote wonderful short stories, started and finished law school at Stanford. We got together only once at the Cinco de Mayo Festival in San Francisco. I got backstage passes to see Carlos Santana and Los Lobos. I caught myself rereading letters, remembering the things we did, the fights we had, the tears I caused. I must confess that I wasn't much of a letter writer, but I could cram a lot of writing onto a Walgreens postcard. I was extremely consistent and could get out 3 to 5 postcards across the country every other week. But the strangest letter I read was from someone I knew who was a writer. How did I know this? She had poems attached. She detailed our relationship, coolly described how I was handling things, how she was neatly handling the things I wasn't handling. And for the life of me, I couldn't remember this person or the situation that caused us to meet. Her handwriting provided no clues. Even the anger she displayed in her writing did not spark any memories. But I am positive she was a nice person, and she has not stalked me over the internet. Mexicans are not good with photo albums, organizing photographs, or even developing film. I had a half dozen film canisters that still need developing, and by the light brown packaging, I would guess it's from the 1980s. I organized my photos by child, which meant my oldest child had pictures of his first birthday, first walk, first tricycle, first day of school. My youngest child had a couple of pictures the first decade of his life. Yes, he just turned 10 years old last year, and not much to show for it. I am putting together albums. I started out with my pictures and found only 3 pictures of me before the age of 18 years old. My 6-year-old school picture, a headshot with my coarse hair cut short, standing up and waving. A picture of me at 16, standing in our backyard basketball hoop, and me walking off the stage of my high school graduation. I found birthday, Valentine's, and love notes from my ex-wife, Clara. She never wrote much, but I had always blamed her for not trying hard enough to make it work. But when I opened each card, There was a plea for me to remember that she loved me, accepted me, warts and all, and that she was waiting for me, would wait forever, but I couldn't see it until now, that she had not stopped waiting until way past the end had come and gone. And as the week ended, I was able to whittle the van load of papers into 10 white file boxes, file my tax returns for the past 2.5 decades, even when the IRS audited me for making too much money reading poetry. I found some diaries I had kept, my planning books, a series of speeches, 2 short stories and a play. I started to cry, thinking that I had archived my life, plus the fact that one of my children would someday have the courage to want to see what their father really did with his life. I would probably be dead at the time and would come alive again in front of their eyes through these papers. This is Oscar Morales for Mind's Eye Radio.
Judith Zuckerman reminds us that aging can also be a mellowing and a time of revival and freedom.
Anne Rudolph. Time pulses through her strong dancer's legs, wrapped in a black leotard, covering her age. Her hand-painted scarf flutters when she leaps over the huge wooden dance studio floor. Her long gray-white hair flying says, "I'm free at 80. Anamika hibernates behind curtains of Amsterdam lace. She hesitates, then limps out the door to her herring cellar, ignoring hail pellets. She carries her pride like the stick that supports her weight. She creates her own portrait. Oracle. This is Judith Zuckerman for Mind's Eye Radio. One modern myth,
about how older folks laugh and play after retirement doesn't always work out that way. The so-called golden years can be tough. In this skit by Evie Thompson, one couple deals with the grim realities of illness and hospitalization by creating their own myth.
Hi, how are you doing?
Pretty punk, actually.
Let me fix your pillow. Food okay today?
Ah, god-awful.
Maybe tomorrow they'll let me bring in something you'll like.
Yeah, and maybe tomorrow the doctors will let me go home. Not.
Want to play another round of Golden Years?
I guess, sure. We've pretty much talked about all the things that need to be said.
I'll start, okay? Let's pretend we have a new car. I really love our new Lexus. Love running my fingers over those soft leather cushions. And the way the dash lights reflect off your face when we're driving at night. Now you.
Yeah, well, I like the power of the engine. Just touch the gas and you go.
I like that, too. And driving all the way to Florida from Wisconsin comfortably in just 2 days, so that we're not all tired out when we get there.
You know, the car's okay, but let's do the cruise ship instead.
Okay.
I like our cabin on the top deck. All that space.
And the fresh flowers every day.
Dancing under the open sky.
You look so elegant in that black tux.
And you look pretty neat in that slinky ball gown, too. Must be all that exercising.
We do a sexy tango, and everyone stops and looks and claps. And then we wander out onto an isolated area on the deck. The moonlight's as bright as day. A soft wind caresses my hair. Your hand's on my back. You kiss me, and your lips are so cool.
I pull you over into the shadow of the lifeboats and begin unzipping your gown.
Shh! Shh! They'll hear us. You are such an exhibitionist.
Don't you like the idea of getting undressed in forbidden places?
It might be okay for you, but at my age you don't want everything just dangling in the breeze. So, we go back to our cabin. And it seems like it takes you forever to unlock the door.
And then...
No.
Yes.
Darn.
What?
The lab tech with her little cart is standing right outside the door talking to someone.
Do you think if we pulled the curtain around the bed and did a lot of giggling, she'd think something was going on and go away?
Afraid not.
Well, it was good for me. Was it good for you?
Always. Always. You are good for me.
Poet Fran Rawl.
Cassius Clay said, "The legs are the first to go." People die, other people, even people I know while I sit reading in bed. It's so astonishing, this advancing age, like wading through deeper and deeper water. The mind may be high, but the water keeps rising. Suddenly there's too much skin hanging around, flapping. Inside, I can hardly see my way through, peeking out in all directions. From the Middle Ages till now, there's been a silver cup chained to the courtyard drinking fountain at Winchester College. They thought that silver made things safe. Where is my silver cup? This is Fran Rawl, still legging it for Mind's Eye Radio.
May God bless and keep you always. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you. May on every run, and may you stay.
In the second half of our show today, we get suggestions about making pink lemonade out of pink slips, and how no matter how old we get, William Shakespeare will always be older. And let T.S. Eliot take us out to the beach.
Let us go then, you and I, when the evening is spread out against the sky like a patient etherized upon a table. Let us go through certain half-deserted streets, the muttering retreats of restless nights in one-night cheap hotels and sawdust restaurants with oyster shells. Streets that follow like a tedious argument of insidious intent to lead you to an overwhelming question. Oh, do not ask, what is it? Let us go and make our visit. In the room, the women come and go, talking of Michelangelo. The yellow fog that rubs its back upon the window panes. The yellow smoke that rubs its muzzle on the window panes. Licked its dung into the corners of the evening. Lingered upon the pools that stand in drains. Let fall upon its back the soot that falls from chimneys. Slipped by the terrace, made a sudden leap, and seeing that it was a soft October night, curled once about the house and fell asleep. And indeed there will be time for the yellow smoke that slides along the street, rubbing its back upon the window panes. There will be time to prepare a face to meet the faces that you meet. There will be time to murder and create, and time for all the works and days of hands that lift and drop a question on your plate. Time for you and time for me, and time yet for 100 indecisions, and for 100 visions and revisions, before the taking of a toast and tea. In the room the women come and go, talking of Michelangelo. And indeed there will be time to wonder, do I dare and do I dare? Time to turn back and descend the stair with a bald spot in the middle of my hair. They will say, how his hair is growing thin. My morning coat, my collar mounting firmly to the chin, my necktie rich and modest, but asserted by a simple pin. They will say, but how his arms and legs are thin. Do I dare disturb the universe? In a minute there is time for decisions and revisions, which a minute will reverse. For I have known them all already, known them all, have known the evenings, mornings, afternoons. I have measured out my life with coffee spoons. I know the voices dying with a dying fall beneath the music from a farther room. So how should I presume? And I have known the eyes already, known them all, the eyes that fix you in a formulated phrase. And when I am formulated, sprawling on a pin, when I am pinned and wriggling on the wall, then how should I begin to spit out all the butt ends of my days and ways? And how should I presume? And I have known the arms already, known them all, arms that are braceleted and white and bare, but in the lamplight down with light brown hair. Is it perfume from a dress that makes me so digress? Arms that lie along a table or wrap about a shawl. And should I then presume? And how should I begin? Shall I say, I have gone at dusk through narrow streets and watched the smoke that rises from the pipes of lonely men in shirt sleeves leaning out of windows. I should have been a pair of ragged claws scuttling across the floors of silent seas. And the afternoon, the evening, sleeps so peacefully, smoothed by long fingers, asleep, tired, or it malingers, stretched on the floor here beside you and me. Should I, after tea and cakes and ices, have the strength to force the moment to its crisis? But though I have wept and fasted, wept and prayed, though I have seen my head grown slightly bald, brought in upon a platter, I am no prophet, and here's no great matter. I have seen the moment of my greatness flicker, and I have seen the eternal footman hold my coat and snicker, and in short, I was afraid. And would it have been worth it after all? After the cups, the marmalade, the tea, among the porcelain, among some talk of you and me, would it have been worthwhile to have bitten off the matter with a smile, to have squeezed the universe into a ball, to roll it toward some overwhelming question, to say, I am Lazarus, come from the dead, come back to tell you all, I shall tell you all. If one, settling a pillow by her head, should say, that is not what I meant at all, that is not it at all. And would it have been worth it, after all? Would it have been worthwhile? After the sunsets and the dooryards and the sprinkled streets, after the novels, after the teacups, after the skirts that trail along the floor, and this and so much more, it is impossible to say just what I mean, but as if a magic lantern threw the nerves in patterns on a screen. Would it have been worthwhile if one, settling a pillow or throwing off a shawl, and turning toward the window, should say, that is not it at all. That is not what I meant at all. No, I am not Prince Hamlet, nor was meant to be. Am an attendant lord, one that will do to swell a progress, start a scene or two, advise the prince. No doubt an easy tool, deferential, glad to be of use, politic, cautious, and particulous, full of high sentence but a bit obtuse, at times, indeed, almost ridiculous, almost, at times, the fool. I grow old. I grow old. I shall wear the bottoms of my trousers rolled. Shall I part my hair behind? Do I dare to eat a peach? I shall wear white flannel trousers and walk upon the beach. I have heard the mermaids singing each to each. I do not think that they will sing to me. I have seen them riding seaward on the waves, combing the white hair of the waves blown back when the wind blows the water white and black. We have lingered in the chambers of the sea by sea girls wreathed with seaweed red and brown till human voices wake us and we drown.
I grow old, I grow old, I shall wear the cuffs of my trousers rolled, saith the poet Thomas Stearns Eliot in his persona as Prufrock. Yet the poem recounts his thoughts on the way to a party. Sometimes maundering through one's memories reveals some fairly unpleasant youthful stuff, too. Still, to paraphrase somebody on the difference, Paul Thompson seems to say, I've been young and I've been old. Young is different.
A woman friend of mine, who's in her 80s and having some health problems, recently told me, aging isn't for the weak, you know. Remembering my adolescence, I would say youth isn't a picnic either. But the young can hope to graduate from their acne and awkwardnesses and parental control. Whereas the old, well, we just get older and frailer. It actually starts around 30. You yourself aren't affected just yet. But suddenly, people you know, people of your own generation even, start dropping dead. Whoop! A pulmonary embolism, the doctor says. Who would have thought it? His friends all say. Bang, a suicide. Crash, two dead, one severely injured in a road accident. Somewhere along the line, your parents go. And suddenly, the universe is colder and lonelier. At heart, you're still young, still full of dreams and longing. But the real young don't see your dreams. Just a middle-aged guy or lady. Those tattooed biceps, those bare midriffs, are not on display for you. You look in the mirror, and by God, they're right. Your skin is coarse. You've got pouches under your eyes, And where did that belly come from? How many years do you have left? And waking in the early hours of the morning and listening to the wind overhead, even though you know intellectually the dead are out of it, you wonder what it's like to be 6 feet underground in the dark, getting eaten by worms. But you're still charging ahead, still stumping to be vice president of marketing or get your kids out of the nest. And then you get called into your supervisor's office and find you're laid off, permanently, too old, too expensive to keep on. Or your significant other announces he or she's in crisis and wants some space. Need I go on? Yes, I do, because there's more. You start discovering ailments you never heard of. Atrial fibrillation, Fuchs dystrophy, peripheral neuropathy, basal cell carcinoma. Pretty soon you're on 8 different medications and the doctors are making regular tours of your interior. Grow old along with me, declared Robert Browning. The best is yet to be, the last of life for which the first was made. Get out the walker, Betsy, we're going dancing. Well, it's true that there are compensations. You're a lot smarter and more judicious. When the temperature is below zero, you put on a warm coat, boots, a hat, and gloves, which is more than most college students do. You have some sense of history. You know that the First World War preceded the Second, and what people mean by the DMZ. And some sense of proportion. You're aware that the universe doesn't give a good hoot about Janet Jackson's right nipple. And best of all, you hopefully have learned some faith, hope, and charity to be patient with an old guy fumbling for his wallet in the checkout line, to visit a friend in the nursing home, and just sit there and maybe hold her hand even though she doesn't recognize you, to clean up after your grandkids vomited on your good carpet and tell them it's okay, to go down to the food pantry even on a cold, rainy day and stand there on aching feet to give groceries to the needy. No, old age isn't for the weak. But given the opportunity, I'm not certain I would elect to go back and lose what I've gained. For Mind's Eye Radio, this is Paul Thompson.
Across the morning sky, all the birds are leaving. How can they know when it's time to go? Before the winter fire will still be dim, I do not count the time. Who knows where the time goes? Who knows where the time? It's time for them to go.
but I will still be here. I have no thought of leaving, for I do not count the time. Who knows where the time goes? Who knows where the time
piques the interest of poet John Morgan, even as he senses that he has seen his peak retreat in the rearview mirror.
Intimations of approaching old age. My back cracks, my knees creak, it's hard to hear when people speak. They may as well be speaking Greek, it takes an hour to take a leak. If some satisfaction I seek, it seems to take about a week. Got all my pills? I'll take a peek. Time is a thief, time is a sneak. It carves its tracks on ham and cheek. I was a sheik, but now I'm weak, with shrinking brain and blooming beak. It's plain the future's looming bleak. To all remarks I reply with pique. It's not at all a thing unique. The years went by like a streak. It appears I'm past my peak. This is John Morgan for Mind's Eye Radio.
Mycelia, you're breaking my heart.
Poet Kathy Miner.
Silver threads. She is forever finding silver threads. On a routine trip, returning the garbage cans to their appointed space, she spies something metallic among the mulch around the flagstones. Bending down for a closer look, she finds mycelia, the long, fertile fibers that give birth to fungi when conditions are right. And indeed, tiny grayish toadstools have popped up here and there along this fragile lifeline. On her head, also, she acknowledges silver threads, these signaling not fecundity but its end, yet glinting in the same way in morning's light. Perhaps wise grandmother spider has put them there, a reminder that everything, from mushrooms to middle age, has beauty to be recognized and is webbed together with shimmering silver threads. No longer counting the gray strands, this is Kathy Miner for Mind's Eye Radio.
Thank you.
Poet Norma Gay Pruitt tries to tie tradition in with the yearly celebration of her birthday and that of the bard.
Birthday morning of my 54th year, my day, and also William Shakespeare's, in that order today, if no other. I make my birthday call to Mother, thanking her, as ever, for my being. As usual, she tells me about the others. Nephew Stevie barely survived back surgery, having a bad reaction. She got her widow's benefits sorted out. Since Daddy died, there's more emergency in her tone, but she still signs off, "I love you, hon," in the voice I crave, like that of my own son, trying to extract a promise that he will always call me on his birthday. I get the ironic sigh, "Okay, okay, now can I go out and play?" He cannot imagine ever feeling any other way. It's as it should be, and a party tonight. Okay to age, okay. This is Norma Gay Pruitt, a ragged coat, though stylish, upon a stick for Mind's Eye Radio.
Esther Cameron takes advice from poets who have been there before us.
Aging has two faces, the changes you see in yourself and the changes you see in the world around you. As the lines deepen in one's face, the world moves on, not necessarily along the lines one had hoped. Since time immemorial, the aging have complained about the young not meeting their expectations in some way. Maybe the following is just another example. I hope so. But a couple of weeks after writing it, I read an article about the temper of the present college generation, entitled "Souls Without Longing," maybe by someone my age. Timed out. I had thick, dark hair with a reddish glint, and brows that almost met above my nose. I'd take the stairs two at a time. I'd sprint to catch a bus, or sometimes skip. Flash clothes and ethnic beads were my delight. From time to time I'd dream a myth, or write a poem vivid in imagery, though short on rhyme. Such are the gifts of youth, the gods bestow 'em. And the wise do not grieve at growing older, if they can see the gorgeous garb of youth draped gracefully across another shoulder. But earth has suddenly grown old, and drought has sealed the souls. The young no longer dream, and wistful age alone recalls the gleam. I'm Esther Cameron, not getting any younger, for Mind's Eye Radio.
Lynn Patrick Smith examines a concept all of us have to consider. We will never have enough time to accomplish all our youthful aspirations. But maybe, he adds, we can seize the time we do have.
Spent the whole afternoon sitting down by the lake, watch a boat sail away, like choices we didn't make. We always drift along. Your job is not what you had hoped. I lost mine in a budget cut. Doesn't feel like a great loss. Don't know how I ended up crunching numbers in an office. What I'm thinking now, do we do the things we talked about? If we wait for the perfect time, it never comes. It's time to decide. This is not the life we imagined. We were gonna start our own business. We were lured by the steady paycheck. Let them worry about the big decisions. Something's lost in that train. What I'm thinking now, do we do the things we talked about? If we wait for the perfect time, it never comes. It's time to decide. I remember how we thought we could open our own coffee shop. It would be where everyone stopped on their way to work. I spent the whole afternoon sitting down by the lake, watched the boats sailing by. I felt like it's not too late, and now it's decision time. What I'm thinking now, let's do the things we talked about. If we're waiting for a sign, this is it. It's time to decide. Oh, it's time. Yes, it's time.
I think it's time.
This is Lynn Patrick Smith with Janet Smith for Mind's Eye Radio.
William Cooper once noted that he that has seen both sides of 50 has lived to little purpose if he has no other views of the world than he had when he was much younger. And Bob Dylan noted this paradox. I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. We hope that you've been edified by the collective wisdom of today's Mind's Eye Radio writers, young and old. That's our show. Thanks for listening to Aging, It's Not for Sissies, written by the Mind's Eye Radio Collective in Madison, Wisconsin. The show was produced by Kelly Warren and co-produced by Gay Davidson-Zilski. Today's writers included Esther Cameron, Kathy Miner, Oscar Morellis, John Morgan, Norma Gay Pruitt, Fran Rahl, Lynn Patrick Smith, Paul Thompson, and Judith Zuckerman, with the guest voice of Tom Elliott. Original music by Barbara Chusid. If you want to know more about upcoming programs, go to www.mindseyeaudio.com. We are now downloadable at Radio for All, and that's the number 4, at www.radioforall.org. I'm Greg Willard. Best wishes from Mind's Eye Radio. I'm 53 years old. But I don't look it. No, I do look it. And I look like I'm 53 years old, but I am a piece of... Yeah, much better.
Physical
and mental. Yeah, both. Absolutely. Yeah.